Thank you, Dr. Royster. A lot of action going on in Virginia. I think the politics are interesting too, given your new little grant to bridge between the executive branch and the assembly, which in many states is virtually impossible anyway, but now given the politics of what you're struggling with, it may be an interesting path for us policy wonks to be watching. As I mentioned earlier, we'll be hearing both presentations now, and then we'll have a chance to have a discussion afterwards. That being said, we'll now move from a state-specific presentation to a picture of the nation, as we know from the research we're about to hear. I'm thrilled to be introducing Meenu Mishra. Meenu is a senior analyst in health equity at the Association for State and Territorial Health Officials in Arlington, Virginia. And she has a report on a survey that I think we're all eager to hear that describes the state government structure and the various elements nationally that we've been looking forward to hearing. So, Meenu.
Thank you. I'm going to give my presentation from here, if that's okay. And I hope you all can hear me. Let me know.
Should we try to move the microphone for the recording? Or is that too much trouble?
It's attached to the computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a really good point.
Is this one longer?
This is the recording, and that's the amplifier.
You
know, we could put them in a chair. Oh, that's good.
This is Deborah Delacandro, also from the Health Federation of Philadelphia. Oh, sorry,
I'm
chair.
You know what? I think, yeah, let's try putting a chair.
We could view closer to the mic with a chair, or we could
do
this.
Chair closer. Thank you, Mike. I think this may do it. Thank you, Deborah.
Okay, great.
And we'll try this too.
That doesn't go in the computer, but it'll help the room.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, I'll try to talk this way. And Anne is so kind as to be moving my slides along. So I wanted to thank all of you for coming and for your interest in state minority health and our survey. I also wanted to say how impressed I am hearing about what Virginia has been doing, and that there's a perfect way to kind of go from something very specific to the broad survey that I'm going to be talking about. So ASTO stands for the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, and we serve health officials in 50 states, the District of Columbia, and 8 territories. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. So in my presentation, I will give you some background on ASTO's survey, the Minority Health Survey, the methodology that we used, some key results, and our future steps. So the Office of Minority Health at HHS has been our funding partner for ASTO's Health Equity Program. A major part of this program was to gather information on what states were doing in the areas of minority health, health disparities, and health equity. And I use all these terms because, as you'll see, the states are in various, they all use these different terms, and they vary greatly across their organization and their infrastructure. So minority health offices in the states were also, in most cases, established through a legislative mandate. So because of their diversity, there's just a great need for this kind of research. So our minority health survey went out to 57 states and territories in 2007. I just wanted to state that at the time of the survey, we only had 57 states and territories as our members, not 59 as we do now. So we used an online survey called Custom Insight, the software, and we also mailed out paper surveys. And we got a total of 46 responses, or an 81% response rate, which was pretty good. Yeah. So some information on the survey. It had 22 questions, and they were a mixture of open-ended and closed-ended questions. The questions were on kind of spanned the gamut of state demographics, agencies' health priorities. Oh, and I also wanted to point out that the acronym you'll see STHA a lot, and that just stands for State and Territorial Health Agency. So their health priorities, how they organized the department or the unit, and whether they had a strategic plan. And it also looked at budget issues, how many staff members were allocated, to minority health and health disparities issues, whether the staff members were 100% full-time or partly allocated. And we also asked questions about partnerships and also some examples of specific programs that they were doing in their states. And so we collected these short qualitative responses describing their programs, their target population, funding sources, partners, evaluation methods they may have used, and any outcomes of interest. So now I'm going to talk about the results. These are just a few of the results and the highlights. We did run quite a few additional analyses to see if there were any relationships between the variables, but we had a pretty small sample size, so nothing really came out significant, statistically significant. So we asked if their state health agents and territorial health agency had established different priorities for minority populations. And so some examples of state priorities are, say, increasing language access, decreasing disease disparity, reducing infant mortality among African Americans, or integrating linguistic and cultural competency into health delivery. So these are all in percents, but I also put the N above each column. So for this one, you can see that 27 states did have, in fact, different health priorities, and 19 states did not. So we were also interested to see if the state and territorial health agency had a primary contact person for minority health and health disparities. And so vast majority said that they did. So 44 states said that they did, which was 96%, and 2 states did not. So, was the primary contact person 100% full-time? And so we found that about 61% or 28 states said that, in fact, they were full-time 100%, but 35% said that they were not. So 16 states said that they were, quarter or half-time allocated. And there are also a couple missing data. So we also wanted to know if they had an organizational unit of minority health or health disparities or health equity. And so this means basically there's a home for health for these issues at the state and territorial health agency. And so 78% or 36 states said that they did have an organizational unit, whereas 10 states said they did not. So this graph shows the number of organizational units for minority health and health disparities in chronological order. So it starts off at 1988, all the way over there and on the left side, and then it goes up to 2007. And so in 1988, there were two organizational units. And at the end, in 2007, when we surveyed everyone, it went up to 33. And so it's interesting, the 90s, it actually stayed pretty steady at 16 units. So this is so interesting because Dr. Royster talked so much about advisory boards and commissions. And so we asked about that as well. And we were interested in knowing if they had an advisory board or a group that would kind of provide recommendations to the state and territorial health agency. And we separated it by internal to the agency or external. And most advisory boards were in fact external. So 24 of them were external, and about 16 states said that they had an internal advisory board. We also wanted to know if the organizational unit got federal funding from the Office of Minority Health. And 30 states, or 65%, said that they did, and 7 states said they did not. Also, legislation or a mandate to create and maintain a minority health or health disparities unit. So 27 states said they did, and 19 states said they did not have a mandate. Also, we wanted to know if there was a specific budget for minority health and health disparities activities. So 31 states said that they did have a budget, and 15, or 33%, said they did not. So this was very interesting. We wanted to know, so who makes decisions about money? And this question was set up so the respondents could just check off the categories that were correct for them. So we found that it was divided with the highest percent of 81%, percentage of 81% going to the state and territorial health official. After that, it was the state and territorial legislature at 75%. Then the director, or the sometimes called the coordinator of the Minority Health and Health Disparities Program, was 72%. The governor had 63%. The program, and other program managers at the state health agency had 31%. And there was an other category. We also asked about partnerships and collaborations that they may have formed around minority health and health disparities activities or issues. So this chart shows the wide variety of partnerships. So the highest was 45 states at the bottom, you can see, said that they had partnerships with nonprofit organizations, not surprisingly. The smallest was the 18 states saying that they had formed partnerships with corporations. So they kind of range from, you know, federal government, health systems, and that included clinical networks, professional associations, foundations, schools, university, media, and other governmental advisory boards. So we also wanted to know if they had a strategic plan and where the strategic plan was located, specifically for minority health and health disparities. So 17 states said that they did have a strategic plan, and it was part of the overall state and territorial health agency's strategic plan. 20 states said that they also had a strategic plan, but it was standalone, specifically within their Office of Minority Health. 10 states said that they did not have a strategic plan around minority health and health disparities. And 15 said other, and so the other responses ranged from, a lot of them said they were in progress, and one state said that they used Healthy People 2010 objectives to guide their work on health disparities. So what did we do with all this data? We created what we call snapshots of each state and territory responded. And it's kind of, we put all the information in a very user-friendly format. There are 2 to 3 pages and with lots of graphs and visuals. And you can go, I urge you all to go to our website if you're interested and go to the Health Equity homepage and you can just click on the state that you're interested in and it'll come up. And our next steps is that we are planning to do a 2010 Minority Health Survey, and we're in the planning stages. Of course, we're interested in comparing the results from the 2007 data as well, but we expect that many of the questions will stay the same, but we're also planning on asking more questions specifically around what states' approaches are to health equity. And during the question and answer session that'll follow my presentation, I'd like to kind of have any recommendations that you all might have who work in the field of what would be useful for you to know. And thank you. Thank you for coming.
We're so fortunate to have both of you. This is a very rich presentation. Thank you very much. This is a time for us to sort of compare notes and ask questions and or answer Minu's request for feedback on the next survey. So I'd like to just open it up for a group discussion at this point. Right back here first.
I have a question on one of your slides.
could check more than one.
Yeah, yeah. It was, the question was set up that they could check off it, whatever they felt was right. They didn't rank it themselves. They just checked off, you know.
So it wasn't necessarily the person who made the direct decision on their budget. It was anybody in the budget decision process.
I think yes.
Okay.
Yeah, or the key person. I think it was the key person, and whoever answered the survey, they just checked that off.
I think we can think of examples of where there would be partnerships and how they're answering that. It did add up to a nice percentage, greater than 100%. Katie?
I think that it also might be different levels of decision making. Like I noticed, for example, program managers was in there.
Right.
And I was thinking that, you know, at a high level, a certain amount of money might go to, say, the diabetes program, and then there's a program manager there who could allocate some of it for targeting African American population or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how, you know, there's multiple decisions with the same pot of money. I think that's what that was.
Yes.
It's actually quite encouraging if you think about some sort of inclusive shared decision-making process that must be going on there based on that, those percentages. You read your hand up too, Katie?
Oh, yes. I had a question for Dr. Roaster. The Healthy People 2020 evaluation project that you mentioned, I know you said you were talking about seeking more funding to make that sort of ongoing, but I was wondering what the time frame was for the initial work there.
It's just a one-year grant, so right now we're piloting the presentations. Our health commissioner is going to be giving presentations to those target audiences that I talked about. So we're actually next week we'll be piloting that for the first time with the outgoing administration. And then as the new administration comes in, they have their transition team, I think we're going to meet with them because they get reports from all the agencies anyway, and so we'll meet with them and then the other members of, you know, the General Assembly that will be coming in beginning of January and February. And so that will be an ongoing process through the end, I think it was end of June or end of July, I believe, would be the end of the funding. So during that time, we expect to be able to meet with all of those potential target audiences. The other thing I didn't mention is that we're also developing an online, web-based adjunct to this, so that in addition to those key, you know, agency leaders that will receive presentations from the health commissioner, their staff will then have access to more detailed information and specific case studies about how, you know, state transportation agencies might be incorporating health into their policy decisions. So we have the year for the funding, but again, the website and that will be ongoing. And my office will also continue to provide technical assistance after the funding is in. So we are hoping to get more funding to you know, create a kind of more of a sustained, ongoing, interactive work.
And will you be measuring the sort of awareness and attitudes of the people that you're talking to about it, and also counting the number of cabinet level policies that?
Yeah, that's what we're going to be measuring. From the presentations, their change in awareness or intention to incorporate health into what they do. And then we're hoping that since it's, you know, it's going to be a whole new administration and they're going to be kind of getting their focus, that it may be an opportunity for them to, from the beginning, to start to incorporate some health-related priorities into what they do. And so we're hoping that we will see some actual impact in terms of policy decisions, you know, sometime during, you know, later in next year.
So, and your series of, there's a theme there that at the end of it. No, that made sense. It all flowed. Yes, over here.
Hi, thank you very much. I learned a lot. My name is Mia Rantanani, and I live in Maryland, and I'm serving my sixth year on the Montgomery County Commission on Health. And we're very fortunate that we have an African American Health Initiative just celebrated 10th anniversary. We have an Asian Initiative going into its fifth year, and a Latino Health Initiative. And there was a last year, there was an office on health equity at the county level government that was approved, but the county council didn't hire anyone because of budget constraints. So my question is, I love the state profile. Can we get to the level of county level? How many counties have an office on health equity? We don't have a Native American initiative. So how many have, you know, specific initiatives on population? that would be, for me, a bench press. So hopefully okay. that can help me. I would love to be the handyman.
Okay, and that could be something, of NACHO, the organization, of the association that serves city and county, that could be something.
Work with them collaborate.
Exactly, that's a great idea.
And there are some currently local health departments around the country that are kind of really taking the lead in the effort, like in Louisville and Alameda County.
But is there any report like this that does the state minority health offices? I haven't seen anything. I know a little bit about what's happening in LA and the big cities regarding Latino health, but I haven't seen a compilation of all of that yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either. I'm not sure if NACHO's put that together.
I haven't seen it.
I can ask the Richard who works on health equity at NACHO.
Sounds like you've been able to connect with the other jurisdictions that are like yours in terms of what they're doing. There just isn't a compilation.
Well, just through APHA going to different
right.
sessions, I've seen presentations,
right.
and I only know about Montgomery County because that's right.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Sure.
Oh, I just heard Louisville mentioned and something.
Alameda County, California. Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
If you can give me your information, I will get back to you with that.
Yes.
Mike, I have two questions. For your small business project, how long has that been running and how long do you think we have funding to continue that project?
That has just started. We just received the funding in the last month or two. And it's actually building on the Riverside initiative that's going on in the Hampton Roads area. We're both from Virginia, so we. but it's it grew out of. So that's the general answer. But it grew out of a governor's health reform commission recommendation to provide insurance to small business to employees of small businesses, and the premiums would be paid 1/3 by the employee, 1/3 by the employer, and 1/3 by the state. The Riverside Health System in Norfolk, Newport News initiated that on their own when there was no state funding to do it. And then we just got this grant to kind of replicate what they're doing in the Newport News area and other parts of the state. Any other questions?
And follow up to that question, do you need a student to help evaluate that? Have students looking for a graduate project?
I'm sure we could use one, yeah. Let me know.
Yeah.
All
right, the second question was regarding the natural causes. Do you have a regional trainer in Hampton Roads that I could contact?
Thursa Crittenden?
Yeah,
she would be the one. But yeah, definitely we can arrange something like that as well.
Thank you.
And I should mention, just to build on that, on our website, we have a link to Unnatural Causes, which has great resources on how to use the tool. We also have Train a Trainer that we've developed specifically to a lot of the work we're doing in Virginia that's on our website. So. That's accessible for people who, again, want to kind of replicate that kind of work in other places.
Mm-hmm. Just given the diversity of systems, state by state, for addressing some of these issues, I was wondering what your thoughts were about how to circumscribe the work. I mean, it's easy to expand it. But also given the limited resources, how do you do that? How do you start to say, well, this is what we do this, but we don't do this? And that's for both of you.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing challenge for us. And we kind of, as we go along, we have a strategic plan that kind of guides our work, but we kind of have to, make decisions as we go along, because fortunately there's a lot of growing interest in looking at these issues, and we get a lot of requests. We try to, one, to work with a lot of partners who can do this work as well, so that it's not just our office or the health department that's kind of leading this effort. But then also looking at, again, opportunities that link together multiple issues. We try not to be exclusively, disease focused. We try to look at opportunities to link multiple, if there's multiple categorical funding streams to try to link together multiple issues, multiple categories, but looking at the social determinants that are common to all of those and how they are different among populations. So it is a challenge, and we're actually, right before the governor leaves, he submits his new budget, which is supposed to have additional cuts. So it's going to be a continuing challenge for us to really prioritize what we do in ways that will have the biggest impact in maintaining the broad. We still think it's critical to have that broad perspective of recognizing that we can't be, you can have a whole bunch of different categories of work, but the reality is that when you talk about health equity or health inequity, it extends across all of those areas. So we have to be very strategic in how we do that and really continue to demonstrate that linkage across areas.
And this answer from the state that has a long list of accomplishments. So it's an interesting way to struggle with how you prioritize and how you decide where you move forward with certain projects. And I wonder if there's any knowledge from the national survey that can address this question too.
I don't think there's anything specifically in the survey to address this very good and interesting question. I think for us, it's, because we're a national organization, we look at a national level. So I think one thing is that just ourselves, our health equity program at ASTO, we are also going to be putting together a strategic plan specifically in our health equity program. But the other thing I wanted to point out is that we have health equity in our larger ASTO strategic plan. It goes across the bottom of it. And so in that sense, everyone is supposed to be thinking about these issues, no matter what, where they work. And so hopefully, I see my job is kind of gathering and providing information, any technical assistance to states, and just really being able to serve their needs and what they find useful.
And within the state equivalent to that, we work with the other programs within the health department and the other external partners who are then starting to take on this work, again, oftentimes within their category, but they're starting to see the bigger picture and link various things together around health equity.
If I could just add something also. If I'm not mistaken, the next step in this process after the 2007 survey is to do some case studies before we launch into the 2010 survey.
Right.
And I think I might be hearing an excellent question that might work its way into the interviews for the case studies.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of my question is coming from a small rural state, so that the economies of scale that you can achieve when you have a larger infrastructure, you cannot achieve in the same way. And so that's where I think but yet we have a whole same set of concerns, a broad range of concerns. And so some perhaps attention to that, I think, is warranted in whatever fashion we can incorporate.
Maybe a nice capacity building idea, particularly planning for the next survey, in terms of beginning to define some core elements that would help direct a less mature program to begin their planning. That's a great idea. The anecdote, the case studies may be a nice way to do that.
What state are you from? What state are you from?
Maine.
Maine?
1.2 million.
Small population for a large geography.
Yes.
A lot of us in the Eastern Seaboard squeeze a whole lot of people. I was curious, both from the survey that you did and also, I know the answer for Virginia, but whether any of the offices of minority health have branched beyond ethnic and racial minority to look at issues of LGBT?
That
needs to go in the 2010 survey.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's a nice segue to it if people saw the main paper? The AMA, that's been really conservative in many ways, said that they're against Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and they are against anything, any barriers to same-sex marriage because it is a health disparity issue.
Because if you're covered under health insurance, it's less likely to have the inequities.
Right.
That announcement was huge news and made one inch in the Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it goes. But they just announced yesterday, I don't think I think it's related to our meeting here. So
think there are people that are
the time
we
have
to see right now.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I know that those obviously that are created by legislative mandate, I would assume are defined racial ethnic. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you had.
No.
Do you ask them what they define it as?
It sounds like it's something they may think about for the next survey.
Yeah. It's. I don't think we asked exactly how we asked about priorities and you know who you serve. Lots of other those kinds of questions, but we didn't ask that.
I'm just curious. Isn't it related to actual health disparities though? With minority health, that's what they're looking at, areas of disparities.
They are, but they are. I think it depends on the state, and some states kind of focus on racial and ethnic, and other states focus on social determinants of health. So, you know, you can look at lots of different areas.
Challenges that there, if we haven't been collecting data about health disparities, there are some folks who have been doing studies about health disparities for LGBT or subsets or people, MSM of color. There are studies about health disparities, but it's not collected on a population level the way we do with, you know, like, we don't have anything to say about lifespan data that you can do with,
right.
You know, vital statistics.
Right, but there is, I mean, an increasing trend to putting a question about sexual orientation on a tobacco survey, for example, because there's such a high rate of smoking among the LGBT population.
So can I ask a kind of a numerator denominator question on that one? I'm from California. I live very close to West Hollywood, so very supportive of equality. And actually worked for State Senator Sheila Kuehl, Women's Club for so openly LGBT in state legislature. But my question here is, in the past, we're dealing with 2010 in the census, okay? We're dealing in the past where the census has had to keep that information under lock and key because of the confidentiality issues. On that, we're dealing with young kids in school that are actually committing suicide when they get outed or when they're suspected by their dress, etc., that they may be gay. And so there are a whole lot of issues here we do need to explore. So my question is, have any been working on Gary Locke at the same time, and kind of how we want to handle the denominator data and the collection of them? Because as you're collecting the numerator data, which is the incidence of XYZ, you know, or the prevalence of XYZ, we need to kind of know that data. So I leave it to you. You guys are at that point.
Well, I think in general, we our focus as an office has been primarily on race and ethnicity, socioeconomic status, and geography within the state. But I think we've, because of our broader focus on the idea of health equity and social justice, it really ties us to a lot of other communities and populations. And so, you know, some of our collaborations with other offices within the health department has been around issues, gender-related issues, and to a smaller extent, LGBT, with, you know, our HIV division, which they're probably the one that focuses on that most. But again, they're looking at it from one particular, you know, disease area. So I think that's definitely an issue that, you know, I think we do have to kind of broaden how the health department looks at different populations and understands them. It was actually, it's funny because I just got an email the other week from an advocate in the LGBT community who was asking that specific question about who in the health department does that, and there really isn't anybody at this point that does it comprehensively. So.
It seems like the advocacy issues regarding the denominator question goes beyond the sort of ways in which we on this panel could have an influence. You're talking about access to census data, which has really prohibited some of the work to be done. That if we had the numerator, what is the denominator we're talking about? So it's a challenge in terms of what even ASTO could do, I think.
The limitations of the census data is that the only way that we extrapolate is we asked about same-sex partner, we asked about domestic partner. So we didn't ask, and unfortunately in this day and age, I think it is still appropriate. We didn't ask people to identify their sexual orientation on the census, but they were able to extrapolate by the numbers of people identifying being in same-sex partnerships and using models of, well, then they represent you know, the X numbers of unpartnered same-sex bonded people.
I see him as I was looking this way, and I see him. Sorry, I lost my attention. What other comments or thoughts about the upcoming survey has Nina invited do people have? I think this is a good opportunity to really do some brainstorming here.
Yes.
How are you using technology to eliminate opportunities?
Okay.
Are you thinking of that as sort of an open-ended question, or do you have some thoughts about how they might be using technology? Thinking social
health education. I know you mentioned this moment in the Office of HIV/AIDS. I mean, they're doing a lot of social health education, or I went to an event the other night, Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies is Welcome to Jackson Women's, exactly, for pregnant women who's just texting, webinars, trainings, you know, different things.
And I'm interested in how other states are using GIS and spatial analysis.
Yeah, your maps are quite intriguing. And I think we did already hear some interest in beginning to sort through what some sort of core activities may look like that are models at smaller, less mature activities in some states. But mm-hmm.
If
Nina
could just
ask
one first orientation to what you're doing, but the question I have is, in each of the states, it seems people will be very focused on what's happening there. You know, they don't get out that much and so on. And so I'm wondering if there's a way to start to identify some of the structural barriers that are experienced by the state offices in moving the work forward that are beyond what's happening within the state, beyond what, you know, providing the service there. What is it on a larger policy-oriented scale that could be identified?
Well, we actually, and I should have talked a little bit more about the case studies, as Katie mentioned, but that question is one of the questions we're interested in. We're taking a few states that have, you know, completed this survey in 2007 and looking in more in depth at what they're doing. So kind of just going beyond the overview survey that we did and just more in depth on, you know, their approaches, barriers, challenges, as well as successes. And, you know, we are hoping to have written up case studies and have them up on our website by February. So that is a question that I think is sort of a question that would lend itself well to a qualitative study, because you can really kind of probe and talk about that. But that's an interesting one to consider for the larger survey.
What other brewing questions or comments do people have?
Two here. This may be more appropriate for the case studies, but if there was some way to get it in this kind of qualitative, how siloed they feel, or how integrated, being, because you've talked a lot in the Virginia experience that you really are trying to go broad and look for opportunities to integrate your health disparities, health equity work outside of the Department of Health, because health is impacted by so many other governmental departments. So that would be interesting to know.
Yeah, I agree.
I apologize. I kind of really came in late, and so I'm a little less familiar with what you're measuring and how you're measuring, et cetera. But I do kind of come to this conference overall with a hope that we will have health reform next year, and the health reform that we have promotes equality. And so one of the two words that keep juggling in my head is this concept of, even in the presidential campaigns, Hillary Clinton even talked about quality, if you will, and she didn't get into the differentiation of race and ethnicity, because that means there's a standard of quality. You know, so if we are culturally competent, linguistically, you know, all those things. So that when I looked at the word quality and equality, and just hyphenated it, I looked at that internet strategy, if you will. And so I was just kind of wondering, when I look again at what I'd like to see out of health reform, I don't want it to be insurance for all. I don't want it to just be healthcare for all. I actually want it to be health for all. And so I've worked in the world of New York and California and looked at the majority minority states, if you will, and know that this would be a view of the future. And I'm wondering to what extent we're looking at those states in particular and then modeling off of that to now just kind of get into the categorization of just, you know, just people as people. I mean, in other words, you know, there are people who are going to be Asian and Black. You know what I'm saying? We just have the hybridization. We just can't get away from that anymore because we encourage this kind of interracial marriage type of thing. So I just was just kind of wondering as we're kind of moving forward, getting away from the word minority, and don't get me wrong, everybody's mistaken that word, but I'm just trying to kind of, again, kind of move it forward to include other populations that frankly have been discriminated against, been a victim of social injustice, and kind of evolving to this other broader model called equality.
If I may, one thing that from many things that impressed me, Mike, about your presentation was the way that you had scores for various indicators, one of which was distance to care. I mean, in the state of Virginia, they have, in fact, it sounds like to my lay ear, begun to define what does the quality system look like, its access to care, and its other markers as well, almost down to zip code, by the way. So I don't know if you want to just sort of reiterate some of that information that it was really the kind of depth you're talking about. I think it's some of the stuff that Mike was presenting.
And if I can just interject, so the next question becomes health manpower, because that seems to be the stick point when I'm dealing with people. They kind of go, it's empty box insurance for all. We don't know that we're going to get health care.
Well, I guess some of the work that we're doing is looking at the distance to providers, the distribution of providers, because in Virginia, part of the problem, certainly a problem with having enough providers, but they're also maldistributed in that they're disproportionately in urban areas, disproportionately, you know, take private insurance versus Medicaid and whatever. So it's partially where the providers are located in addition to having them where you need them or having enough of them. And then also issues around service fragmentation we started to look at, and then also cost barriers. So some of what we do is mapping like distance to care and the distribution of providers around the state to try to help, you know, alleviate those issues with some of the incentive programs that we have. But then also going to your bigger question around terminology and the bigger equity issues, where our office name is actually politically defined in that our governor a few years ago wanted to demonstrate his commitment to minority health issues, and so the office was renamed Office of Minority Health and Public Health Policy. Ideally, we would have changed, we were actually looking at changing the name to the Office of Health Equity because of that, what you're thinking. But strategically, we decided to keep it the same because of ongoing budget cuts, and it's harder to cut money for minority health than it is for health equity, which a lot of people don't really get into that as much. So we've maintained this name because of that reason, but eventually, you know, as things die down, we may change it to the Office of Health Equity.
How many offices of health equity are there?
I don't know the number. Do you have the?
We didn't collect it at that level,
Okay. So
that could be something that could get on our next survey.
But there's a growing number of them that are changing their name to that.
Right, and we.
Association of Minority Health Officers.
Right. So they would have a website to Google.
Yeah. Right, and we wanted to, when we did our survey, this was in 2007, so we wanted to be inclusive of every, you know, no matter what they called it. You know, some they call it Office of Minority Health, Health Equity, Health Disparities. We wanted to make sure everyone could respond to our survey, because that's what we were interested in. And that's sort of our role, is to kind of survey what is actually going out there in the states.
I have a question. I was curious. Who did not respond? You did have non-
We want names.
I don't have it memorized as who did not respond.
36 out of 50 states and other territories.
It was 46 states 46. And territories responded.
46.
Yeah.
46 out of 57.
Yeah. Out of 57.
And then I guess some of the territories didn't respond.
Yeah, quite a few of the territories.
We don't usually get 100% response from the territories. But I'm sure there was a state or two that didn't respond also.
I'm curious why. Did they not get it?
They get a lot of surveys.
Yeah.
They get a whole lot of surveys.
There was no incentive to fill out the survey?
Pardon me?
There wasn't an incentive to fill out the survey?
We don't tend to use incentives when we send surveys to state health officials. Lacey can speak to that.
They can't really take any gifts or even honoraria or things like that because they're government employees. So the only incentive we can really give them is the ability to advocate on their behalf. And most cases, that alone is enough to get the majority of people to fill out surveys.
Remember, doesn't ASTO have an annual meeting though when you present it there and when they ask?
No. We don't tend to do surveys at the meetings.
But would they ask the state health officers and ask to keep on top of the
survey? Oh, trust me, they've been asked multiple times to fill out the surveys. It's just you.
I mean, I'm running about six surveys in the last 2 months, and so you know we come at them a lot. We try to keep it to a minimum, but we get very good response rates. It's not like a regular phone survey of the regular population, but we don't always get 100%.
Really small tent.
They have a lot of them.
They have many competing
priorities. Yes. They get from the association, and they also, if they really don't fill it out, get a call from their peers. So I think, it's unfortunate. I'm sure Katie and Mimi would love to have all of them respond, but they were contacted multiple times and asked. And at some point, you have to move on to the next survey. So
is this about doing online?
Is that how
it was online?
Was the modality?
It was online. Yeah. I mean, I guess I figured 81% was a really great response rate. So, you know.
100%.
Yeah, but it's not thousands of people. There's 59.
Well, it was 57. I think
that's pretty good. It is pretty good. She just wants 100. She's sitting the bar really high.
What else do people want to comment on before we thank our presenters today? An excellent panel, I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you.